Yeah, I want to talk about my delegation I attended to Xinjiang that was organized by the China-US Solidarity Network. I went with Sarah Flounders, who's also on this panel. Xinjiang is important as a topic to discuss because there's a lot of misconceptions around this, especially on the left. It's an economic hotspot in China, and it's crucial to the Belt and Road Initiative. And it's also crucial to the economic development in China internally, and solving the uneven development that's taken place between the western provinces and the eastern coastal cities. And so developing Xinjiang is part of closing the poverty gap, which China has been working diligently towards. And these are some of the reasons why the US is targeting Xinjiang as a focal point for propaganda. The Uyghur genocide narrative is something that is often brought up with this topic. And this narrative is meant to drive a wedge between different ethnic groups within China and stoke divisions, and also justify sanctions. And the sanctions are predicated on the idea that, all of the products that are produced in Xinjiang are products of slave labor unless they prove that they are not. And therefore, they're all subject to sanctions. And these sanctions are actually hurting the Uyghur businesses in China. And it makes it so that they're not able to sell to overseas markets. They have to sell a lot of their products internally. So this is not to protect Uyghur people by any means. This narrative is actually harming them. And this strategy of division and stoking ethnic conflict and separatism is the same strategy that the US imperialist camp has used in Yugoslavia. It's the same strategy they used with the Soviet Union and the reason why we have a war between Russia and Ukraine today. So, this is the same playbook that we've seen over and over again, and we should not fall for it a third time. And China has studied this playbook deeply. China is also adjacent to many of the countries that the US has destabilized across Western Asia, countries like Afghanistan, for example. People don't really think about that fact, but China is actually bordering many of these countries on the Western side. So all of the different types of meddling and invasions and bombings that the US carries out, this all actually impacts China, especially in Xinjiang. The US has been backing Uyghur separatist militants in much the same way that we know that the CIA did with Tibetan separatists. The US has turned Syria into a training ground for militants in much the same way that neo-Nazi groups from across Europe and across the world in the US have traveled to Ukraine during the Civil War to actually fight. And then they bring that combat experience back to their home countries and unfortunately increase the right-wing extremism that we have to deal with here. And this is where, in Syria is where a lot of the Uyghur separatist groups have been training as well, even as recently as when Assad's government was overthrown. So this is all something that the US is backing and facilitating, either directly or indirectly. China has actually suffered many attacks by some of these separatist groups up until the 2000s. And unfortunately, Uyghur people and other Muslim communities were actually the victims and the targets of a lot of these attacks. China's approach to dealing with this terrorist activity has not been the same as how the US deals with it. All we really need to do is look at how the US reacted after 9/11. The US invaded multiple countries and committed acts of genocide through warfare and sanctions and just absolutely decimated a lot of the countries which it blamed. And we know that China's response to the types of attacks that they used to experience has been completely different. China, on the other hand, recognizes that poverty is the root cause of, what leads people to be susceptible to extremist ideas and to get involved in crime and other things like that. So poverty alleviation has actually been the central way of alleviating these attacks from happening. And now these attacks don't happen anymore, and Xinjiang is a safe place. And it was extremely safe when I was there, maybe within the last year or two. So now I want to talk about what I saw while I was in Xinjiang. I saw a really vibrant culture. It was probably the most diverse place that I've ever been in my life, as far as the architecture, the different types of music and art and dance that I saw. The food was probably the best part about it. I could talk just about the food for another hour. I didn't see any evidence of religious or cultural suppression or censorship, as the US media claims. We visited a couple different mosques, including Uyghur mosques and Hui mosques. I saw many different languages posted all over on signs, businesses signs, street signs. Sometimes you'd see four to five different languages, which really is not even something you see in the US, despite how many different language communities we have in our cities here. It's usually learn English or get out is the attitude that unfortunately the US tends to take. But yeah, we also visited some museums in Xinjiang that teach the history of Uyghur people and the other ethnic and national groups that live there. So this is not something that's suppressed. It's something that is celebrated and taught openly. Some of the people that we spoke to Uyghur families, Kazakh and Tajik families, other national groups that are there. We spoke with a Uyghur store owner who I actually asked them about different questions about, what do you think about the Uyghur genocide that's going on? What can you tell me about it? And he actually has never heard of it. He asked me to explain what that even was. And then, you know, after I did that, he kind of laughed and said he's just never heard of it before. You know, we asked about the relationship to the CPC that the community has. Does the Communist Party enjoy support or criticism from their community? You know, what's the relationship like? And what I was told was that a lot of people support the Communist Party because, especially during COVID, the Young Communist League actually went door to door through the different neighborhoods and delivered groceries and food and other necessities that people needed, which is something that would have been really nice to see in this country. We also spoke with some farmers and veterinarians. We learned about some of the affirmative action programs that the state and the Communist Party have in place to pay for schooling for children of ethnic minority groupings, also grants for small businesses. I talked with a veterinarian that said that he was actually given basically a ride to college from the state in order to be trained as a veterinarian. And now he teaches apprentice veterinarians because the town that they were in, it was a smaller farming village. They didn't have a veterinarian. And I asked, you know, what happens if the farmers need to, you know, if their sheep get sick and they don't have enough money to get the sheep treated? And he told me that the government would pay for the sheep's treatment. And I said, so basically what you're telling me is the sheep in China have better healthcare than the people in the US do. And yeah, so we also talked with some construction workers. I spoke with a Uyghur family. The husband was a construction worker. And at the time I was working in the bricklayers union as a tile setter. So we kind of both were doing the same work. And we talked about the different labor protections, and wage theft was a big thing. He said that his boss at one point had stolen some money from him that he owed him. And the government actually followed up with this and forced his boss to pay him in full what he owed him, which as somebody who was involved in trying to get the sweat bill passed in New York State where I live, for like the last few years, we know that if you live in New York State, I don't know if it's the same in Oregon, but there's actually no laws forcing your employer to pay you if they commit wage theft. And wage theft is the biggest form of theft in New York State. So that was like a very stark difference. I was very surprised to hear about that. But, you know, that just goes to reaffirm the socialist character of the, you know, workers' dictatorship that they have there. And lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about Xinjiang and Gaza, because unfortunately, the US media tries to compare these two things. They try to divert the anger that people are rightly directing against Israel, and they try to redirect it against China and unfortunately split up the world anti-imperialist movement. You know, when we look at Gaza, we can see what a real genocide looks like. We can see that Gaza has been completely turned into rubble. It's a massive humanitarian crisis beyond what any of us can even imagine. And, you know, it's nothing like what we saw in Xinjiang. I don't even really know what to say about that comparison because it couldn't be further from the truth. And I think that needs to be said. I think that we can just see from the videos of what we see in Gaza and what we saw when we were on the ground in Xinjiang, that China builds and Israel and the US bomb and destroy. China is a multinational worker state. And the Uyghurs and Tibetans and the many other ethnic groups in China are a central and integral part of the revolution that took place that threw off the chains of feudalism and colonialism. And I think it's also worth mentioning that the socialist revolution in China actually restored a lot of the traditional Uyghur names of the cities and villages that they lived in that before the revolution actually had Han names. And they had erased the Uyghur names, but that was actually reversed after the socialist revolution. So there's actually been a resurgence of the Uyghur language being used and also taught in schools, along with other languages that are spoken. You know, Israel, in contrast to that, is a Zionist settler colony, and it's an appendage of the world imperialist system that's predicated on the theft of land and the super exploitation of Palestinians. Uyghur culture is celebrated, and it's a crucial part of making China the strong nation that it is today. And Israel, on the other hand, can only exist through the exclusion and the elimination of the Palestinians.